I'm here and I'm going to do it. And I'm Joy. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is May 31st, 08. And I'm just going to ask God to help me speak because I don't like speaking in front of people. In fact, it's one of the least things I like to do. If I could think of anything else I'd like to do, this would probably be the least. But because of AA, I have the courage to change. And I might start crying. And I don't want to cry yet, so. I was born in Huntington, West Virginia. It's an extremely small town. And I was born to a mom that she had just turned the sweet age of 17. My father was only the age of 19. And they decided to get married and have kids. Why they wanted to do that, I don't know. It was a disaster from the start. They did the best they could. But it was always a lot of cracks. There was a lot of things that always went wrong. My mom was out of the foster care. And my father really didn't want, you know, to get, you know, married. But, hell, I don't know why he did it. But he did it. And they got married, and they had three children. My mom stayed home. My father was employed at the post office, and things were never the way they should have been. There was always a whole lot of fighting. There was a whole lot of accusing. And you know, my mom, she was determined that everybody was going to be perfect. I mean, we were going to be the black little Leave It to Beaver family. I mean, seriously, she did all the stuff for Christmas, and she wanted us to all be perfect. We were always clean, and from the outside, that everybody looked fantastic. But it was a very, 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 very sad time for all of us because they were both alcoholics. And they fought and they drank and they tried and they fought and they drank and they tried and they fought and they drank and they tried and it just did not work. And, you know, things were okay until I was the age, I guess, of maybe like 5. And then I had some things that occurred. The first thing was that I was molested by a friend of the family, and that kind of changed me because I saw that I just wasn't special, and that had a big effect on me, and you know what, I didn't, you know, say anything to anybody. I just kept it extremely quiet. And the next thing that happened was I found out that I stuttered, and I found out that everybody else knew that I stuttered, and so I didn't like to talk, and I always wanted to be very, very small. Because I didn't want anybody to ask me anything. I didn't want anybody to ask me, you know, my name. I couldn't stand, you know, to talk in school. And I was always extremely ashamed of it. Because, I mean, who else, you know, stuttered? And not only did I stutter, but I was 6 feet tall when I was, you know, like 12. And that was horrible. I mean, I was always, you know, the person that was in the back of the classroom. I was always, you know, I mean, I had all these folks that, you know, would come up and say, "How tall are you?" And it was very uncomfortable for me. You know, this is a lot harder than I thought. And so, at 5 years old, that I think I saw that things weren't going to be okay. And my father decided that he was going to stay, you know, to go on a lot and get a whole lot of girlfriends. And my mother was going to still stay home and, you know, continue, you know, to bake and just act like everything, you know, was fine. And I can remember when I was, I guess I was about maybe like 8, and that there was a knock at the door, and there was this, my father's girlfriend at the door, and she told us that my father was having an affair, and he had a whole nother family, and didn't anybody even know about it, and that he packed up, and he actually decided to leave us. And that's when things got horribly bad, because my mother, she didn't know how to, you know, to support a family. She had no idea. And she became an alcoholic, and she stayed drunk all the time. She had a nervous breakdown. And I was so pissed off with her, because I thought that she should have just, you know, like pulled it all, you know, together and, you know, and, you know, and, you know, and, you know, find a career and, you know, like, and keep, you know, control of her kids. And she couldn't do it. And so everybody became extremely rebellious, and everybody did just what the hell that they decided to do. And she just sat on the couch and drank ice cold 121 vodka and prayed for my father to come back, and he never did. And so by the, oh, this is important too, I'm sorry. See, this is hard because I stuttered, but what was the bad thing was is that it was back in like 1966, and it just wasn't, you know, like a thing that anybody really, really, you know, like spoke about. And I can remember when I was in the third grade that I was called on to speak, and I couldn't do it. And the school instructor came by and hit me on the hands, and she said, "You're a very bad girl. You're a bad girl because you don't know how to talk. You don't know how to do this." And it really just changed my whole life because I just didn't feel accepted. And so anyway, I just wanted to say that because that played a big part in just in things in general. And this is, boy, it's only 8:20. And oh, my God, this is going to be long. I don't believe it's only 8:20. And so when I was 11 years old, I discovered that I could feel okay if I would have a shot of vodka. I was only 11. And I found when I was high or when I was drunk that I could talk and I could have friends. I was the life of the party. Everybody liked me, and I had no fears. And I was like, hey, I mean, this is okay because that I don't have to be, you know, I mean, it was, you know, like a fantastic thing. I was like, hey, I mean, this is the way, you know, to ease the pain. And it was all what, also, that I didn't have, you know, to face, you know, the fact that I was from a family that was far from normal. And so that's why I did it. And I continued to do it all through high school, all through junior high school. That was my thing. I wanted to do it. I had no plans on stopping. I didn't want anybody to talk to me about stopping. And then it was, you know, like, you know, it was like, it was 1969 and 70. And, you know, like, I mean, then it was, you know, I can't, excuse me. I mean, but it was okay to be high, because that's what everybody did back in the 60s and back in the 70s, and everybody thought it was cool. And that I thought that I was cool. I mean, I thought that as long as I could have, you know, these, you know, like smart stations where I was standing around smoking a joint and having some alcohol that I was cool. I mean, we had all these conversations about how that we were going to, you know, like change the world. And I mean, and I explored all kinds of stuff. I studied, you know, the Holy Quran and became like a Muslim. And then after that, I became, you know, like a vegetarian. And then after that, I did some other stuff. But it was crap, man, because I was always trying to find myself. And I was always doing stuff. But I thought I was fine because I was smart. You know, I thought as long as I could get up and I could go to class, then I was okay. And by the time I was 15, I was an addict and I was an alcoholic. But I didn't think that I was an addict and an alcoholic. And I had a daughter at 15, and I hung out with all these kids that had it, you know, I mean, they had it going on because they had all of the liquor and all of the drugs you could have, and I thought I was in the know. And, you know, still I was extremely, I still did not like to speak, and so I became very, very small, and I stayed very, very small, and that was fine. I mean, all I wanted to do was just, you know, hide. You know, because it was extremely hard staying in a small place where everybody knows that your mom is an alcoholic, and everybody knows that, you know, your father is right up the street, and it was just bad because there was a whole lot of talk and a whole lot of gossip, and it was extremely uncomfortable. And so I started high school and still drank and still drugged and still skipped school and still partied and still did what I still stayed buzzed all the time. I mean, I did everything buzzed. I mean, that I went to school buzzed, I got off from school, and I got buzzed again, and I would hide, you know, some wine in, you know, my backpack and keep some vodka up under my bed, and I stayed buzzed, and I thought I was okay. That's what's so strange about it. I thought I was fine. I was like, you know, I mean, this is, you know, like an okay thing. And I don't know how I actually, you know, finished school, but I did. I don't know how. I think I had like a 1.8 average or something, and they finally just said, "Get the hell out of here because we're tired of looking at you." I don't know how I graduated. I swear I don't. And I had no idea. I mean, you know, I was like, okay, I've got a 1.8, you know, with GPA. I've got a mom that is an alcoholic. And I don't know what to do with myself. So I decided to go to college. And I don't even know how I actually, you know, got into college. They probably had extremely low standards back then because they just let me in. I couldn't believe it when you know, like the guy called and said, "Hey, do you want to go to college?" I said, "Sure." But still just continue to do the exact same thing. I was always fine with just you know, staying extremely small, extremely mediocre. I mean, that you know, was fine. And I continued, you know, to party, and I just kept doing the same thing, and I'm probably not even saying everything that I wrote down because I'm about to pass out up here. I think I'm sweating. You know what? This is the way I used to feel when I was in school, and they used to ask me to come up and give, you know, like an essay question or something, and I'd be sweating up under my armpits, about to pass out. This is the way I still feel. I feel that tonight. Like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm up here with a microphone speaking. But I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. So, but anyway, I continued to do the exact, things, and I finally got through school. I don't know how I got through school, because I would go to class high, I would get high after class, I would get high or drunk in the morning, I would have some vodka at lunchtime. I mean, it was crazy. You know what? But everybody was doing it. Or I thought everybody was doing it, because I, hung out I hung out with a crowd that's what they did. So I was fine with it. And so I got through college, and I somehow actually managed to finish college. I don't know how I did that either. I think I had, maybe a 2 point, perhaps. I don't know. And I was always, finding, what was strange about it was that all these folks would say, oh, Joy, you're special, and there's all these things you can do, and there's this light inside of you, and you can do this, and you can do that. And I never felt that way. I never felt that way at all. And that I just felt extremely small and unsuccessful, and I blamed everything. I said that I was unsuccessful because I was black. I said I was unsuccessful because I was a woman. I said I was unsuccessful because I didn't have any money. I was unsuccessful because, my mom was an alcoholic. I was unsuccessful because I had a dad that, had gone away. But the fact was, I was unsuccessful because I was an alcoholic and an addict that never completed a damn thing. I would start stuff and I would never complete it. I would say, I'm going to go to, become an attorney, and I would go and, buy the book, never read it. Or I would say, oh, I'm going to head up so-and-so, and I would get all excited about it, never complete it. And that was just me, because I was always bust. So how can you do anything when you're always stoned or you're always drunk? It's impossible. I was in a small town, and so I said, well, it's not me, it's the town. I'm from this dump. Small town in Huntington, and I was like, I'm getting out of here, because if I get out of here, then I'm going to be big and successful, and I'm going to be all the things that I want to be. And I didn't know that, you take yourself wherever you go. And if you're an alcoholic, like in West Virginia, you're going to be an alcoholic here in damn Atlanta. But I didn't think that. I thought I could just go and I was going to be this wonderful thing, So I decided to come here. And when I, I still continued the exact same thing, because what I want to say is, it's so true that I, continued to do the same things, expecting completely, completely different results. And I don't know why. And so, that came here like in 1984, and then I complained that I couldn't find a job. I can't find a job. Well, I probably couldn't find a job, because when I would go, I would probably smell like pot and vodka, because I would even get stoned before I would even go in, places, because I thought it would, standing in front of a person and speaking, when there is a speech impediment, is one of the hardest things to do. And so this is what I would say, well, that if I just have a shot of vodka, I'll go in there and I'll set them on fire, and they'll see how fantastic I am. Or like if I just smoke some pot or something, and And I mean, I'll be fine. And then, they'll say, wow, I mean, we should hire this girl. Why did I think that? I mean, why did I think that anybody was going to hire me? But I would come out and say, they didn't hire me because I stammered. They didn't hire me because of this. They didn't hire me because of that. But it was because they could see that I was a screwed up person. But so anyway, I found a job here, but it was always small jobs. It was always things that I could do and hide, you know, things where I could get high before I went to work and wouldn't anybody say anything, or I could go out, you know, at my lunchtime and sit and have a whole lot of Long Island iced teas and come back and I could work and they wouldn't see me. So, I mean, I was fine with that. I was like, I don't care if this is, you know, like a small little mediocre job because nobody's bothering me. And I didn't want anybody to, because I wanted to, you know, continue to do the same things. And I mean, it was bad. And so then I decided that I was going to get married. I thought, well, I'll just get married. And I married, guess what, another alcoholic. Because, you know, I mean, that's what I do. I mean, I always find these guys that have a whole lot, like a whole lot of problems. He was an alcoholic, and I was an alcoholic, and he and I came, and then we said that we are going to get married, and we're going to go to the suburbs and buy a six-figure house and expensive cars, and we're going to live a life. And it didn't work, because he was always partying, and he was drunk, and I was partying, and I was drunk, but I thought that I was fine, and something was wrong with him, because that I was always the one that, you know, could kind of pull it, you know, together. So I thought I was fine. And I had another daughter, and that I said I was going to be the best mom now. I mean, even though I had screwed up everything else, I had screwed up all of my relationships, you know, with my mother and my sister and my brother and everybody else, that I was going to change. And I was going to find I was going to become, you know, like a Girl Scout leader, you know, and a cheerleading mom. And
what time is it?
Okay. And I was going to do all these fantastic things because I wanted to look good on the outside. I thought, as long as I look good on the outside, I'm okay. So I was the mom that, you know, would always say, oh, I'll do it. And then I would sneak back in the bathroom and I would drink. Or, oh, yeah, I'll do that. You know, I'll do this, I'll do this, that, and but I was always buzzed. There wasn't anything I did where I was not buzzed. I would have a Girl Scout meeting, I would be buzzed. I'd go to the PTA meeting, I would be buzzed. And there was a time, this is just a story, that I had gone to the PTA, and, but I was acting kind of strange, you know, because I was, like, bombed. And so she came and said, she said, you know, Mrs. Bikeswood, are you okay? But I got indignant, right? Of course I'm okay. I got pissed that she even asked me if I was okay. And, you know, she actually said to me, she said, I'm not trying to be funny, but I think I smell alcohol. And I was like, how could you think I'd come to a PTA meeting with alcohol on my breath? And I mean, it just, you know, continued. It just continued. And that he and I, we fought and we drank and we fought and we drank, and he tried and I tried, and I had cars repossessed and, you know, houses foreclosed on, because it was all so, it was just extremely chaotic. It was chaotic. And he couldn't stick to a thing. I mean, you know, he couldn't do it. and that I couldn't do it. And you know what the sad thing is that everybody thought that we were this, you know, that everything, you know, was good. I mean, she would say, oh, wow, I mean, she's such a fantastic mother. And I mean, he, you know, was doing, he's involved with this and she's this. But I was living a lie. I was an alcoholic, and I had been an alcoholic from the time I was 13. And I just lived this big, fat lie. And finally, you know, things just got bad. And that I end up, we actually got evicted from our, you know, from our home that was, you know, like six figures. And, you know, he decided, to go off, you know, with somebody else. And I looked at, you know, like at me. And I was finally able to say that I was the problem. There wasn't anybody else that was screwed up but me. Okay. And so I decided that I was going to become, that I was going to stop. That I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And so on May the 31st, 08, I decided I was going to go to a recovery center, and that's what I did. And I stayed there for 30 days, and that it, would change, you know, my life. But I had to learn how to do things, you know, I mean, without being, you know, like buzzed or drunk. And that was hard for me because I was used to going to the store drunk. I was going to go fix, I mean, I did everything buzzed. So that was extremely hard. So I finally found AA, and it was one of the best. You know, it has been absolutely fantastic, because there's no way I could be able to stand here tonight in front of you people and tell this story. And I haven't finished. I was supposed to say, you know, how it was. Then I'm supposed to say what? How I screwed something up? Then I'm supposed to tell how it is now. So let me go with what I did when I was an alcoholic. There were things I just did not show up for. I was supposed to be supposed to be the maid of honor at someone's affair, and I called them the day before I was supposed to do it and said I couldn't do it. And it didn't bother me. I was like, forget her. I mean, she needs to understand that I got things to do. I mean, I would just not go to things. I wouldn't even feel bad about not going to stuff. I'd be like, I'm just not doing it. I just did what I felt like doing. And I thought it was okay. I mean, I've had, you know, folks that were in, the hospital, and that I said I was going to, you know, come, and I just didn't go. I just did not show up for stuff. And, okay, so let me go through that. I'm starting to sweat under my armpits again. Let me see. I didn't show up for things. I had folks, you know, that died and I didn't go. I have, you know, family that died and I didn't show up. And I would never go to things where they weren't going to serve booze. So that was a big thing with me. Like if somebody was going to get married, if they were serving liquor, I wasn't going. that if it was like a reception and they weren't going to serve alcohol, that I wasn't going to that either. So I just didn't go to stuff. And so, so I had a lot of amends, to make. Like, I'm sorry I wasn't your maid of honor, but y'all weren't serving alcohol at those weddings, so I wasn't coming. So let me just say, and I hope the next time I tell this story, it flows so much easier, and I'm so much calmer. But I actually care about, people now. And that I actually, would do things, and not because it's going, to make me look good, but because I am actually, concerned about people now, which I was never like that before. That I have, folks that actually rely on me now and know that they can rely on me. And I speak now from my heart. And I understand, that my stuttering does not define me. I'm sorry. God, I can't believe I'm up here crying. Oh, my God. Because I thought I can never do this. And so, I don't care that I'm tall now. I used to hate it. And I used to hate being tall. I mean, I don't care that, I'm 6 feet. Because I know that God has a whole lot of plans for me. And that I did not ever believe that he did. Because I was like, Lord, if you actually care about me, then how come, father left? Why is my mom an alcoholic? How come I stutter? Why am I tall? How come I couldn't do this? How come I couldn't, do that? But I do know that God... I can't believe this. He has always watched out for me because I've been in some bad places. And sometimes I think I can't believe that I'm still here because I shouldn't be here. But I'm still here. And so I know that He is not through with me. That there are going to be some things that I can do. And so now I'm crying. I can't even finish this. And I have a whole lot of courage now. And I never had any courage before. I was always scared. And that I just always had hoped to stay very, very small. And I'm not very, very small now. And that's a wonderful thing, too. And I have learned to not hold on to stuff. I mean, there used to be a time I couldn't stand, to my ex-husband. And I only say that to not say bad things about him, but just to say, I thought, I'll never forgive him because he's a mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. But I'm not mad at him anymore. I'm not mad at, I just don't have that in me anymore. And that's a fantastic thing. I guess that's it. I probably should say something else. I just know there is a light inside of me now. And it's all because of AA. There is a light inside of me. And I'm not afraid for it to shine. And I know God is not finished with me. And that's my story. And I'm going to go before I start blubbering even more. It's not 9 o'clock.
Wow, that was a plunge from the high dive. That was great. Thank you very much. Our seventh tradition states that there are no dues or fees for AA membership, but we want to thank you for your generosity, helping us contribute to AA Central Zone and cover our expenses here. And I'm asking Frank to give out the chips. Frank W.
I'm Frank Waters, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. Here at the Monday night Blue Chip Speaker meeting, we have a chip system. These aren't NABA chips. NABA doesn't have any meetings, really. We give out the white chip to people that want to try our way of life one day at a time, 1 minute at a time, 1 thought at a time. However you want to put a spin on it, we give you a white chip. It's a white chip because it's a white chip. After 30 days, you get a little silver chip. It's got a lot of little things on it I can't read without my glasses. I remember my first meeting, a big guy named Terry A. gave me a hug that I wasn't expecting. And it scared me because he hugged me in front of everybody. And of course, back then, men just didn't hug men unless you were, you know, from somewhere else. But I got past that. After 90 days, you get a red chip. I want to thank Tim once again for asking me to give out the chip. After 6 months, get a yellow chip. All these chips are called, you know, the different colors because they're different colors, not because they're pumping anything. After 9 months, you get a green chip. It's a green chip because it's green. Anybody got 9 months? After years and multiples of years in this group, we give you a blue chip. It's a blue chip. Anybody here tonight want to try our way of life and just try it 1 minute at a time, get a white chip? Is anybody afraid to hug me to get this white chip? I'll just hand it to you. We do offer this the second time, so I'm going to leave it up here in case any of y'all are like me and you just wanted to steal it. Or you didn't realize that Terry Allen was going to give you a damn hug when you got it. But you know. Anybody else for a 30-day chip? A 90-day chip? A 6 month chip? Or a blue chip for a year, multiples of years? Does everybody in here have a chip? Well, congratulations on the chips you hold.
How about a hug, Frank? He gave me 2 chips the last time. Good hugger. Okay, AA-related announcements. On the 22nd, 55th anniversary barbecue, the Thursday night men's group is putting on the barbecue, and then that's 12 o'clock on Sunday, right, on the 22nd?
Yes.
And I think the cost of the ticket's $7, and they're having a speaker at 2 o'clock. And then on the 28th, there's a hotline, AA hotline workshop, and if you're looking for being more involved service-wise, I'm sure your sponsor would be happy if you volunteered to check out that AA workshop. They're pretty well organized, and you can forward the hotline number to your cell phone, so 1 hour a week you can help somebody who really needs it, you know. And are there any other AA-related announcements? Anybody selling tickets to the barbecue? You have barbecue tickets?
I have no idea.
You ain't got tickets?
That's your sponsor.
See, Tim Moore for tickets to the barbecue. Yeah, that's good service work too. Guaranteed. Okay. I'd like to remind everybody that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions ever reminding us to place principles for personalities, and for those who will, please join us in the Lord's Prayer.
Oh, I didn't have it on the headset.
That's not mine. I got one that's more complicated.
Jerry, that's you?
Here, just write, just sign that right now on here. I'll do the rest.
You need a blue chip.
He comes on to the men's meeting here on Thursday night.
Oh, yeah, on Thursday.
That may have been what it was. It may have been a Thursday.
CEO Mark Warner.